Welcome to Playmakers Talk Show, where business owners, professionals, and entrepreneurs gather to discover playmaking ideas for success. Your host is internationally recognized speaker, facilitator, and author, Steve Klein, who sits down with fascinating playmakers who have made themselves and their company successful. Steve will introduce you to CEOs and executives who discuss their playmaking path toward success. And now, it's time to meet this show's playmaker. Here's your host, Steve Klein.
Andrew Carnegie said, "Successful people are those who render more service than required." Welcome to Playmakers Talk Show. I'm Steve Klein. In the studio today is a guest whose business provides extraordinary solutions and outstanding customer service. Today's Playmakers company reduces customer spending on inventory by as much as 20 to 50%. With us today is a CEO whose company touches 80 to 85% of the manufacturing facilities in Dallas-Fort Worth. This great playmaker is Zach Turner. Zach is CEO of Technotool Incorporated. Technotool is a leader in distributing performance-improving tooling products and services that support major corporations in the aerospace, medical, and defense manufacturing arena. CEO Zach Turner attended SMU's Cox School of Business to study marketing and real estate finance. In 2005, he joined Technotool as vice president. Zach has continued the work of his parents, Gary and Cheryl Turner, by maintaining Technotool's core values while continuing to develop and incorporate improvements, promoting the expansion of the business, and creating a new culture that encourages open communication with customers. Well, Zach, welcome to Playmakers Talk Show.
Thank you.
Question I want to ask you, because in reading your bio, you've been involved from an early age in the business, though you didn't take over until about 15 years ago. But how did you go from working summers, taking out the trash at Technotool, to becoming CEO?
Well, it started as a kid. This Technotool was in the house. And, you know, this was 30 years ago. And my dad always believed in a hard work ethic. And that's where I started, was filing and taking out the trash and doing mundane kind of clerical functions while I listened to my dad do business. And it evolved into me going to school. And I went into banking after school and thought that was where I wanted to go, and ended up back at Technotool. And I came in as vice president, and I went on sales calls, learning the business, learning our customer base, learning the product. I flew all over the world to do training and visiting factories of who we actually sell. And from there, my dad kind of stepped down, and I took over, and we've kind of pivoted our model since then into inventory management role with vending machines and inventory management on-site personnel.
I'm going to ask you in a moment exactly what Technotool does, but what was the impetus? What was the idea your dad had to start this company out of your home?
That's a funny story. He likes to say that he quit. So he was involved. He was a machinist for years at what most people know as Vought Aircraft. And he always had salesmen call on him there when he worked. And he said, "I wanted to do that."
So he never had sold before prior to starting the company.
That is correct. So, I take that back. He went to work into he had never sold before. He went to work for his first sales position. So he went to work for what was a competitor that is no longer in business. And he tells the story that he quit because they made him wear socks. But the real truth is that the sons took over, and he gave me some, you know, good lessons as I was taking over Technotool to not make these same mistakes. And, you know, he kind of got crossways with the kids and ended up leaving and moving on to start Technotool. He took a roll of quarters, a pager, and $1,000, and stopped at payphones to service his customers.
Well before cell phones, and apparently the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, because one of the reasons I believe you left the banking business is because you had to wear a suit. So I guess clothes don't necessarily make the man or make the business either. So what does Technotool actually do? What do you do for your clients?
We have innovative solutions that evolve around inventory management. anywhere from on-site personnel, where we actually put a Technitool store inside a facility if it's large enough, to consignment programs, where we actually consign and consolidate their invoices and streamline their supply chain.
Well, as I mentioned at the very beginning, that you can reduce one of your customers' spending and inventory by as much as 20 to 50%. And you'd also told me before the show, I mentioned that 80 to 85% of the manufacturing facilities in DFW are working with you, and you said that might be conservative. So you're doing an outstanding job. How do you reduce their costs on inventory so well?
We found after analyzing the data that customers have a set quantity that they think that they order. That, you know, they order 3, 6, 5, 12, and 10. That was the common numbers of the quantities that they ordered. And that made up about 80% of the quantity numbers. That told us really quickly that customers really don't know how many they actually truly need. So we took an analytical approach to it, and we analyzed their spend history when we take on a new customer to develop a min-max system to help make it more efficient. And then after that, we apply an algorithm that is demand-based that helps take into account peaks of seasons in their manufacturing processes and allows them to have the right amount of what they need.
So you are doing something similar to what the Japanese started doing with just-in-time. Not necessarily quite that much, but reducing what they believe they need, because through the analytics, they've probably held a lot on hand, which is holding dollars in inventory they don't need to hold there.
That's correct. Typically, the first year we recapitalize a business. Let's say that they have $1 million in spend. We'll recapitalize that business by about $300,000. And that's actual cash that they can now utilize as working capital.
Now, I understand from holding inventory, you need to turn it as quickly as possible, because that's a large sum of money just sitting there, unavailable to use. The fact that you're getting them to turn it or not keeping as much is reducing the amount of capital they have to have on hand.
No question. Yep, that's exactly how it works. And typically, we don't allow the customer to have more than 4 weeks on hand at any given time. We manage the inventory here locally for them, and we take it basically out of their control. And once they kind of let that control go and adapt to that change, they will never look back.
So you're really the inventory control for your clients.
Yes, we manage about probably 1 million SKUs here in DFW.
It's a lot of clientele and a lot of dollars that you're holding. But the question I have from an interview that you had with the Dallas Business Journal, what do you mean by shaking their toolbox?
Inventory management in manufacturing facilities from a perishable standpoint a lot of times are pretty inefficient. And operators who's actually operating the equipment, tend to hoard their tooling so they have what they need when their job comes up. And, you know, it's nothing that they're doing bad or, you know, not following. They just want to do a good job. But if we can bring that tooling back into a controlled environment, we will go and shake the toolbox and pull all that inventory back in. And typically we've done that, and we've, out of a small account of, say, $250,000 budget, you can pull in $25,000 pretty easily.
That's a lot of savings for them, too. Well, let's take a look at a firm that has $1 million in inventory just sitting there prior to you doing business with them. How much can you reduce that on average?
Typically, if they don't have a good system in place, you're looking at about a 35% reduction. So
but you're talking about a lot of dollars for
a lot of
these
dollars.
Companies.
Yeah, that's just on inventory savings. I mean, not to mention the services. I mean, we stock, we audit. We take a quarterly review approach, so we go in and keep everything on pace and always ask the customer what can we do differently or better, or we try to correct the customer on what they're doing wrong or their compliance issues with our program. We look at what inventory is not turning for them that we can actually send back. So every quarter we take inventory back, and, you know, it's if they pay 15% restock charge, you know, that's 15 cents is a lot better than a dead dollar.
So whatever you are charging them for the service, they're getting a lot more in return.
Oh, yes.
Now, your business is different than when your father started 30 years ago. You've been here about 15 years. And one of the things I mentioned at the very beginning of the show was that you're providing extraordinary solutions and outstanding customer service. Talk about what that means for your clientele in terms of what your people are doing in the field with these customers.
Well, specifically, you know, we take a full service approach as far as auditing. We stock the vending machines. We stock their tool crib. You know, a lot of customers, they never even audit their inventory. They don't know how many they even had of particular tooling or perishables that they buy. We consolidate it all. We streamline their purchase order process. You know, and then more importantly, it's about a culture that we try to instill not only with our customers, but with our employees, that we always want to bring cost savings to the table as much as possible and always provide continuous improvement. And that culture resonates today.
You studied finance at SMU. Mm-hmm. You were going to go in the banking business. Correct. You got hired as a vice president. What was the? I facetiously said that you didn't want to wear a suit. That's why you left the banking business. That could be true. But what was the impetus to leave banking and come and work for your parents?
Well, to be honest, there was a lot of my family at the time worked for the company, and I'm an only child, and a lot of people depended on Technitool to support them, and my dad did not have a succession plan, and a lot of people were going to be here after him. So it would have been a little bit selfish of me to not try to take the opportunity to help my family.
So what did the study you did at SMU through finance, how did that help you run the business when you came in here 15 years ago?
Well, for instance, when we sit down around the round table and discuss with our customers cost savings, we've created a model that allows them to plug in their actual numbers and give them a cost savings analysis that we estimate for year one. A lot of times, just from a soft cost standpoint or machine uptime, you know, guys spend a lot of time looking for product that they need. It's not organized. But if you go in there and structure it and organize it, give them a standardized tool list that their programmers can use for their operators, it really streamlines everything for them. And it all, on this cost model, it actually spits out a number that is significantly more than the 35% reduction in inventory that we're giving them.
Well, who's a typical client for you? What I mentioned some of the businesses you work with, but who do you typically work with?
You know, we do a lot with your large companies, such as Lockheed and Bell Helicopter. They're first-tier suppliers here locally. In the oil field business, you know, we mainly have oil field, defense, and aero here in the North Texas region, so that makes up the majority of our business.
Well, your people go in and work with these clients to begin with, so I would believe that you do a lot of consulting up front, spending a lot of time asking questions. How long does it take to find out where they are to actually present a solution, which I believe is unique to every single one of your customers?
Yeah, each customer is not a canned program. They all want to operate slightly different. It's a similar philosophy that we preach, but they each adapt in a different way to the changes that we're trying to make within their supply chain.
Now, do you have people actually working on site with some of these companies?
We do. Uh-huh.
So to keep them, to help them throughout this entire process?
Yeah, they actually, you know, help manage the inventory, take care of their spot buys, audit daily. They do spot auditing, cycle counting.
Now, we spoke before the show started about change, which is a difficult thing to do. You're now coming into a company, and you are promoting change, a different way to do something. How much pushback, resistance do you get initially from some of the employees that you're working with?
It's a culture change. It's you have to lay it out up front for them that it's going to have a lot of touch points and impact a lot of people's jobs. And it impacts them in a good way. It allows them to focus on what they do best, which is manufacturing parts. If they're on board with it, you know, most of the time, if we can get it from the leadership down, it works very well. But when it's a little segmented, sometimes, you know, there's some hurdles involved in getting people to adopt a new philosophy.
I would think most of these individuals, the companies, are paid on their ability to be productive. And in essence, you're helping them become more productive. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yeah, and you know, continuous improvement, luckily, is in manufacturing is a philosophy that most companies try to adhere to. They try to look at ways to, you know, make parts faster, put them on the floor quicker, and this is just, you know, kind of falls in line with it. It's just doesn't have to do with their actual manufacturing. It's more on the supply chain side.
It's interesting. Most businesses start out not planning to control their inventory. They know they need to have it. They just start doing things. And at some point, it gets out of hand, and you're coming in to help control that. Most of your business is in North Texas, but you're not limited there. Where else do you work?
We have business Oklahoma, Wichita, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, California. But the primary business is here in North Texas.
Well, how do you handle that business in the East and the West?
We have salespeople. We also have on-site folks. And some of it's just from the traditional business that we've done in the past.
Do you plan on moving into other states? Because as I was listening to you talk about your business, this is a service that any manufacturing company, no matter where they are worldwide, could benefit from. So what's the potential growth for Technitool?
It's unlimited. I mean, it's a huge industry. We have plans to look at acquisitions and applying our service model to these acquisitions, because it is costly to do this business. When we take on a new customer, say with $1 million budget, you're going to be investing, $80,000 into helping set up software, build a database, hardware. And a lot of guys don't want to invest that money in their customer looking long term. So, we've had one fallout of a customer, and that was, one of my first go rounds when we were getting involved in this. So I look at the investment as our fallout rate is next to nothing. So it's a great partnership with our customer.
That's amazing. Over the 15 years you've been doing this, you've lost, as you just said, one.
One.
And which is amazing for most customers. You talk to them about losing business, and they do on a regular basis.
In the banking industry, we call it a sticky product. So you get your direct deposit, your online banking, all your bill pay. This kind of helps create, and that's a partnership with your bank. They're offering these services. You don't pay for those services, right? You give them their business, and that's what they call a sticky product. Well, it's similar to us. This is kind of integrates us into their business.
Do you have competition? Are there other companies that do what you do? Because you're rather unique with a couple of different pieces of your business, but are there companies that do what you do?
There are, yep. It is a model that is out there that some people are really good at and some people are not so good at. A lot of people say that they offer vending machines or some sort of inventory management solution, but it's really, it's the brand behind it and the people behind it that make it all work. It's not the machine. It's not the equipment,
Well, let's talk about those vending machines. When people hear vending machines, they're thinking of the candy vending machines. But you're going in and setting up a machine for, is it tools, is it inventory, or both?
It does inventory control. It'll do cost control. And we will go in and put in a vending machine, say, and we typically will burn through their existing inventory and then replace it with our own. So it acts as a little store for them to pull inventory from. The inventory is controlled. An operator will go scan their badge and select the tool, the reason for why and what job it will go to. Maybe you need to know what cost center it's going to or what GL code that will go to. So all of that data will be captured. You get 5 fields to capture data on. And once you decide what data you want to capture, we will produce reports that are automated to our customers that they can then put that data in their ERP system to help give them better cost controls and profit analysis.
So in other words, you're doing immediate on-time inventory. At any moment, you can tell exactly how much is there.
Yes.
And where it's going.
Where it's going, who it went to, what machine it went to, what job it was for, and then ensure that they don't run out of that inventory, because that's the biggest part. It really, people overbuy. Our customers were overbuying not because they didn't, it came from a good place. They didn't want their machine to not be running. That's a piece of capital equipment. They might have $500,000 invested in it. If it's not running, it's costing them money, and they're waiting on a $50 tool. Well, we help manage that process and ensure that their uptime on their machine is maximized.
So not only reducing inventory and tools, but you're also reducing the wait time and keeping them more productive. The cost for the analytics they're getting from the vending machines has to be priceless for them in terms of information they never had before. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah, they were never capturing it before.
And all of a sudden, now they know exactly what's going on, and they can reduce costs even further from that.
That's correct. Yep. And that's what we talk about every quarterly meeting with these customers. Our guys go out there, and they really do a good job of trying to work with the customer to figure out better ways or different ways to do it. And we continually evolve our programs that we have within these customers.
So essentially, and I brought this up before, I mentioned customer service. Once you've had a customer, you've gone in there, you've helped them develop their inventory, their tools, their productivity, it now really becomes truly customer service in helping them continually tweak that based on the analytics that you're getting for them.
That's correct, yeah, and keeping everybody on pay. You know, some people leave, new people come in, we got to get them trained up. You know, if they get new operators, we add these operators into the system. You know, you can set cost controls on these operators, so you can say, hey, this vending machine, you know, we want this guy to not pull out more than $100 a day or $100 a week.
Can that be programmed into the vending machine?
That's correct.
So you can limit what they're doing.
By dollar, by quantity, by job. If you knew a job only took one of these for X number of parts, if you have that data, or as we gather that data, we will build out that database.
So I know you have a training tool at your, or a training spot at your office. Do you do training on site for your customers when you go in there, and do you do continuous training as they have new hires?
Yes. So two parts. We do training for our customers on site for product that they actually utilize and for our inventory management services. And then also we have a training room for our outside sales team because we, you know, part of our business is also providing the best product for the application. And doing that, you need product knowledge and you need to be able to know how to run these products in the machines. And the training room gives us a platform to be able to educate not only our customers, but also our employees.
Well, you have a fascinating business because essentially what your business is going in and cutting costs. They have to pay for it, but you're going in there and helping them cut a certain amount of costs out of
a significant amount.
And it goes right to their bottom line.
It does.
So
some of it's reallocation of overhead, but the initial first year, they do get significant hard cost savings.
So how does a new customer potentially get a hold of Technitool?
Well, you can find us on our website or give us a call or send us an email.
And your website is?
www.technitoolinc.com or give us a call at 800-486-6850.
All this information is also on the Playmakers Talk Show website. Well, Zach, thank you very much for being a part of Playmakers Talk Show.
Thank you very much, Steve.
You are definitely a playmaker. A playmaker is somebody that makes things happen. Not only are you making things happen, but your company is making things happen for your clientele. We've just been speaking with Zach Turner. Zach is CEO of Technitool Incorporated. This has been a terrific show. Thank you again to Zach for being a playmaker. It's been great having both Zach on the show and all of you listening to us and joining us. Join us again at PlaymakersTalkShow.com where you can get all of our past episodes. That's PlaymakersTalkShow.com, and we'll be back with more Playmakers. See you then.
You've been listening to Playmakers Talk Show with Steve Klein. Join Steve again at PlaymakersTalkShow.com for more interviews with interesting and successful playmaking CEOs and executives.